to my monthly podcast titled Becoming a Sage. My name is Jan Fried, but you can call me Dr. Jan. I interview people about wisdom, how to find meaning on a daily basis, a concept I call breadcrumb legacy. I'm passionate about helping people get from where they are to where they want to be, particularly in the second half of life. I also say I'm out to retire the word retirement. We are not retiring from life, but we're moving on to something else. And I believe it takes time and intentional thought to successfully move on to what's next in life. Today I'm interviewing Paula Harris. Paula is the co-founder at WH Cornerstone Investments, a part financial advisor and part dream architect. She takes great pride in helping her clients, particularly widowed women, obtain financial peace of mind while they get back on their feet, rise up, and navigate their path forward. Paula is the author of Rise Up, a Widow's Journal. For more information on Paula, please refer to the bio attached to this podcast. Now, I met Paula through an organization, a community called Recognized Experts. When I first heard Paula describe her book, I knew I wanted to know more. My TEDx talk in 2021 was titled Embracing Death, Seeing Life Through a Different Lens. So I've done a great deal of grief work myself, and I'm also a hospice volunteer. It was fascinating learning from Paula and how she's integrated topics about which I'm also passionate. Now, listen to my conversation with Paula. Well, welcome to the series, Paula.
Thank you, Jan. I'm thrilled to be here.
It's interesting because in my work, I too kind of combine, you know, what people want to do with the, so much of retirement planning is financial planning.
Absolutely.
And I say that what I do is, what I like to do with clients and in workshops is the non-financial planning of retirement, you know, the psychological, the emotional, everything but the money. So I was eager to talk with you because you do the money part. And yep. I think that, you know, it's a nice combination. So you are also combining, well, you're combining money with the psychological part. I only focus on the non-financial part, but you're a financial advisor. You specialize in working with widows. Tell us more about how that came to be.
Sure. You know, the scary part for most people don't realize, but the average age of widowhood is 59. And okay. That tends to stun people. So we women will tend to be on our own some large portion of our life. So one of our early clients was Mrs. Sullivan, and she was a widow. She had seven children, and she had to now figure out how she navigated going forward her life. And we just became so endeared with her, and we realized how much value we added to her situation and how much she valued what we brought to her. Not that everyone doesn't value what their financial planner does, but some people, I will say, resist. They kind of push back, they fight, like they may know better, but she, you know, we tend to find widows are like, they're sponges. They are so ready for help and they take it and they receive it and they implement it. And combine that with the fact that my grandmother was widowed at 50. So my grandfather died when I was a year old. I have no memory of him. And I watched her live her rest of her life, the next 25 years on her own. So it's just a group of people that I've been very passionate about for a long time and have become even more passionate in supporting.
Yeah, well, excellent. And you're right. I mean, you know, when you're working through grief at any age or stage of life, it's helpful to have support and advice and wisdom. So is there anything different about how you approach helping a widow with her finances and investments than you do others?
I think there's a lot more patience involved. Okay. You realize that it's probably not going to be a linear progression. It's not necessarily going to happen quickly, or if it's happening too quickly, you have to sometimes slow her down, because sometimes people want to, after someone's passed, they just want to get things done. But really, you need to wait and let things process. If you know, you having done a lot of work with grief, you know that the grief fog that comes over you, you don't even remember for anywhere from 6 to 12 months decisions you made. And so part of our job is to try to make sure that that the widow understands what she's doing, what decisions she's making. And if she doesn't seem really aware enough, slow it down, bring in somebody else, whether it be another professional advisor, like an attorney or a CPA or an adult child, to say, okay, we want to have a second set of ears and eyes on this so that you're getting the best counsel. So there's a lot of patience. You know, I always joke that I do tea really well. You know, we do a lot of hugs and tea. Not that other clients can't have hugs too, but the human touch, when someone's lost their person, one of our widows says, the person, you know, your confidant, the one that you went to for everything, having that human touch, hugs become a real specialty of ours at our office. So that's part of what we do differently. And it's just working at their pace to get things done. And I have spent tremendous amount of time understanding the widow's journey from, you know, listening to podcasts, reading books. Many of the books you reference in your TEDx talk, mm-hmm. I've read those books. I've been to workshops about the Conversation Project. I sit on a board of a hospice home. So I very much have immersed myself in what this journey looks like so that I can provide the best counsel and advice.
Yeah, no, we definitely have a lot of common interest and themes and all of that. Because even though it's only part of my work, in my legacy work, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit later, it's probably the part that's moved me the most and where I've done the most research. And David Kessler and his grief books, and I mean, we know a lot of the, we probably have a lot of the same library.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I love your phrase grief fog, because I can relate to that. My dad died in December of 2020. Now he was 95 and a half, but until the last 2 months, he was basically fine. Mobility was a little limited, but he'd use a walker, mentally sharp. And then he died. It was like the longer he lived, the longer I thought he'd live. And so I had this fog, and I was executor of the estate, and you know, everybody wants this and that and go to the bank. And every time I go to the bank, I would tear up. You know, because I'm at this particular bank because of him. And every time I'd been at that bank, I was with him. Yeah. And so I understand that grief fog very, very well. Well, you wrote the book, Rise Up, A Widow's Journal. And, you know, this is to help support widows on their grief journey. But I have to tell you, after reading the book, I really felt like the journal could be used by anyone who's trying to work through the grieving process. You know, so I mean, really, honestly, you could, tweak this and write it for, you know, a journal for grief, you know?
Well, that you say that, actually, I am doing that. So I have a goal to have that out this summer, because that's what so many people who have seen it say, oh my gosh, I want to give this to my friend who lost their father, their child. Someone said, I think I could even give this to someone who lost a pet.
Right.
You know, not a person, but the grief is grief.
Grief is grief. And that was exactly what I was thinking about as I read this. I thought, because I've read so many grief books, as you and I have, and I thought, it's not a book, it's a journal. And this really, you know, gathering and reflecting on your journey, any grief journey. So anyway, I'm glad to hear you're writing that.
Good.
Well, tell us how this came about, or how the next book's coming, or, you know, that's interesting.
Sure. So I've done work with Jack Canfield, who is the author of Chicken Soup for the Soul, as well as Success Principles. And I have gone on to study to be one of his trainers in Success Principles. Oh. But it was at one of his programs that I got the idea to do this journal. And I was just so inspired. Originally I was thinking I would gather widows' stories and put them into a book like Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Okay.
And then I realized how many people don't want to be interviewed. You know, this is a very emotional, very close journey for a lot of people. And then I said, I'm a huge collector of inspirational quotes. And I was like, oh, I know what I'm going to do. Inspirational quotes to help people journal through their grief process. And I thought long and hard about what were the big areas that you need to work through. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, obviously when you're first single, or you first lost that person, what does that feel like? And then realizing like, oh my gosh, this grief stage is going to last a while. And then, you know, you start to get some wisdom. And then how do you continue to love yourself, love others around you? I put in a chapter on faith, because I think faith helps people a lot. I did a chapter on money. But, you know, and then you get to the point where you're moving forward, and then you realize like you're going to do this. You're going to be back on your own two feet. So really took it through the cycle of what I could see, like the journey that someone goes through with grief. And then people are using it all different ways. They go through it linear, or they go through it like, today I just want to think about wisdom, or today I want to think about love. And they just go to that chapter and find a quote that resonates. So I just find getting tools for people to do something productive when they don't know what else to do can be so helpful.
Yeah. No, I think it's a really beautiful book. And like I said, anyone could use it, you know, so yes, I'm really glad to hear that you're coming out with that. And you know, this is an unscientific generalization.
Yeah.
But my assumption, or based on observation, I think a lot of men don't work through grief. They just want to find another partner to replace.
I would have that same observation.
And would you?
Yeah. Yes.
And, you know, where anyone who's studied transitions, life transitions, you know, it's important to work through it so you don't just jump into the next thing, or so that you make a good decision if you're going to, you know, partner up again. And so anyway,
it's interesting you say that, Jen, because I think a lot of times when there's grief support groups that are mixed with men and women, and I see this on a Facebook group that I'm in that has widow and widowers, the men are often there to date. Like they don't really, I don't think they realize they're going there at first, but they're trying to find that next mate. Well, a lot of the women are being there vulnerable. And then they suddenly feel like, wait a minute, I'm not here looking for someone else. I'm just here to work through my grief, but you're trying to find your next partner, and it can cause a bit of friction.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. You know, the movie that comes to mind, now this isn't about widows, but it's about divorce, people who are divorced. Did you ever see the movie About a Boy?
No. I'll have to say hello.
It's Hugh Grant. It's an English movie, but it's Hugh Grant, and he's looking for a partner. So he goes to a group of divorced people looking for somebody to meet. Yep. Anyway, it's a very entertaining, it's a nice movie.
Oh, good.
Well, my students started calling me Dr. Death, and I say that in my TEDx talk, Embracing Death. Because I help them learn about death, dying, and grief in leadership courses. And, you know, I started this process. It actually came out of my leadership book called Leading with Wisdom, Sage Advice from 100 Experts. And that was published in 2013. And after interviewing, actually, I interviewed more than 100. But after interviewing, one of these themes is I need to be teaching leaders about death, dying, and grief. Now, this was after the financial crisis of, you know, 2008, or about the same time, when I was doing the research. And, you know, these authorities said, you know, there's a lot of grief in the workplace. Well, with COVID, it's only gotten worse. Yeah, you know, people, absolutely. Not just the loss of lives, which is true, but industries and companies, and just, you know, COVID is really kind of what I'm almost calling it, like, cracked our hearts open. Because what people want in a leader now has changed because of COVID. So what have you learned about these topics that, you know, you and I've been mentioning in terms of, you know, death and dying, or good resources that you might mention? Like, there's even death cafes that I have participated in.
Yeah.
Just tell us kind of your top, if you were going to share resources or tips or, you know, about this topic.
Sure. The first thing I'll say is, the vast majority of people are extremely uncomfortable and gets very squirmy when you talk about death and dying and grief.
Yep.
And we actually had a client and her husband in the office a couple of weeks ago. And I've been giving my clients, even the non-widows, a copy of the journal. And she said, I don't want to see it. I don't put it anywhere near me. I don't want it. And it was very interesting, her reaction. She just did not want to talk about death and did not want to reference it. So I feel our society does a very, very uncomfortable about this whole topic. And
very true.
Being Mortal was the book that really opened me up. Okay. When the doctor had to deal with his own father's dying, mm-hmm. he suddenly was no longer doing this clinically. It was now about a real person. And he could see the journey so different. And one of the things I think our medical system does is it's designed to save you at all costs. Mm-hmm. And it's always to give you that one more hope, mm-hmm. as opposed to sometimes we have to be realistic. Mm-hmm. And I think you can be realistic and still be hopeful.
I think you might have said that somewhere in your book because I've heard that. Tell me more about that.
If you talk about death and being prepared, so we talk about curveball life planning. You want to be prepared if a curveball comes out of nowhere, but being prepared doesn't mean it's going to happen. And I think we think that if somebody has a diagnosis, if we talk about, my gosh, we need to have an estate plan done, that means you're going to die. Well, reality is we're all going to die at some point. We don't know when.
Yes.
And to talk about these things is just a gift of preparedness for our loved ones, whether it's a spouse, for the children, or the siblings. And I think more people need to just be comfortable. It's kind of make it a little more black and white rather than it being so fraught with so much emotion, because it's truly something that will happen to every one of us. Yeah. And we get to have, some say in some of it. The five wishes, which yes. is one of those resources.
Yeah, how I'm familiar with that, but talk more about that.
Yeah, five wishes is like, how do I want to be treated at my end of life? Do I want to be left alone, or do I want to be surrounded by loved ones? Do I want to make sure that I'm in a hospice home, or I'm in my own home, or I'm in a hospital setting? Do I have music playing? Are you making sure that, you're holding my hand and you're making sure I'm, extra clean, or my hair's still done, or like whatever is most important to that person, you talk about it. And, and then you make sure like the true end of life things, like, do you want a funeral? I use this example. My aunt passed away. She never had kids, never married. And when she died, nobody knew what she wanted. And one time she said to me, I don't think I want a funeral. And, we were all raised Catholic. And so that was kind of like, wow, that's kind of unusual, but it was very hard. One of my aunts was now a Sufi, and the other two living siblings were Catholic. And they're like, well, what do we do with this? And it caused a lot of stress. So do you want to be cremated? Do you want to be traditional burial? Do you want modern music? And, my brother-in-law just passed away, and in the funeral home, they had the song Freebird playing. The entire time with videos to it, not your traditional funeral type of music, but that meant something to his family. So, how do you help guide the people that are left behind to do something that's meaningful to you, for you, and for them as well? And that's what's so important, is to talk about these things.
Yes. No, I actually, in my TED talk, I talk about how Ellen Goodman, the Pulitzer Prize, New York Times columnist, created an organization called The Conversation Project.
Yep.
Where she talks about this. So, and I got the five wishes. I first learned about it at a workshop. Is that something that listeners can find online, or do you have to buy that? Or
you can, I believe you can still download a copy, I think for free, a digital copy. I think it's fivewishes.org.
Okay.
We give it to a lot of our clients. I'm getting to the point, Jan, where I used to do a lot of things for older clients. We just sent every client, no matter what age, including the teenage clients, the file of life card. Are you familiar with that?
I am not. Where do you get that?
You can get that from a senior center, from fileoflife.org. A lot of fire departments have them, and it contains, you write in there your name, your medications, your doctor, like who's your next of contact person. And ideally there's a magnetic version you keep on your refrigerator, and there's a version that you would keep in your wallet. So if the EMTs or somebody comes, our neighbor, he died in his house, actually right where I'm looking out over. And when they get there, they don't know where to go. If you don't have something like this showing, he was single and didn't have any children. Who do they call? Who do they notify?
Right.
And so these file of life cards are so important. They're important for, a teenager who got in an accident and they don't know what to do. What medications is this person on? Do we administer something? Do we not administer something? So file of life cards are key. But we need to talk about things at all ages, not just when we're elderly.
Yes, I totally agree with you. Well, I'm going to look that up immediately.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You and I share a passion for sharing wisdom. So tell us about, you've got a project called Wisdom Wednesday. And I think you've got a YouTube channel. And so anyway, tell us about Wisdom Wednesday. When I first started this, I wanted to send out an email to my subscribers called, it was Words of Wisdom.
Ah.
And kind of it, motivational quotes. Well, I didn't really, I kind of incorporated something else. But I like this idea of Wisdom Wednesday. So tell us about that, because we might want to subscribe to this YouTube channel.
Absolutely. So when you talked earlier about all the grief out of COVID, I saw that. I saw people struggling so much. And so what I started to do is I would go on Facebook and I would do a live Facebook post. Mm-hmm. We live near the beach. So often I'd be walking on the beach and a message would come to me and I called it, it was Paula's Positivity Prayers and Ponderings. And it was just to bring inspiration to people, because people, people are still hurting, and they are looking for wisdom. They're looking for little nuggets. Mm-hmm. And I loved doing it. And then I realized, you know, it needed to be bigger than Facebook. So I took it and I put it onto YouTube, and I keep the videos to about 2 to 3 minutes. Every once in a great while, it might go a little longer, and they're just nuggets. And people have, you know, I got stopped recently at a party, and this woman said to me, "I have to tell you, you're the reason I got out of bed the other day." She goes, I just couldn't get out of my own way. And I said, "I'm going to go look for Paula's Wisdom Wednesday." And I got up that day, and it's like, oh my gosh, how hungry people are for positivity. Mm-hmm. And I really try to live in that space. And I tried, you know, I'm on my mission, you know, you talk about your missions. One of my missions is to get people to stop watching the news. Mm-hmm. It is so draining, especially when you watch the images they feed into you versus just listening to it. You have to be so careful. You have to protect yourself as to what you invite into your life.
Yes.
And I try to help people make better choices and open their eyes and think differently. Start just to think. I think we get very automated and we just kind of keep going forward, and we need to sometimes get, you know, shifted a bit.
Yeah, I was going to say pause and reset. Or
yes,
yeah, no, that's good. Have you found that going on, you know, posting these on the YouTube channel, that that's a lot better in terms of visibility or scale than Facebook Live or Facebook?
Well, again, it's if you do social media, it's always a challenge. They're always changing things. Like, you cannot post your YouTube channel onto Facebook. Facebook will not promote it. So now I have to, you know, put the video itself onto Facebook, and then I do, you know, put it out in other ways. But I think you get a much broader audience when you can go out to YouTube than just the people that already know you.
Okay.
So I think it's a powerful way. It's warmed my heart, and I feel these divine messages come, and it's like, oh, this is what I need to talk about today.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. Well, my passion, as I said earlier, is legacy. And I actually have a book coming out this year called Breadcrumb Legacy, How Great Leaders Live a Life Worth Remembering.
Love
it. I have a mouthful, but my publisher really liked that subtitle, and I liked the title.
Yep.
So when I say legacy, you know, how would you define it? What comes to mind? Can you share a legacy story? I always ask my interviewees this question.
Yeah, it's interesting. We did not have children. And so I often think of children as legacy. I've thought about this question a lot since being in my 30s. And I think your legacy is how people will remember you,
mm-hmm.
And being remembered. And it doesn't have to be for something that's great. You know, I was thinking about this, you know, like Jack Welch had an incredible legacy as a leader, you know, with GE. But most of us are never going to have that type of visibility. We're not going to be presidents or, you know, big politicians that people are going to remember. But it's the little things. You know, there was a book I read, Life's Greatest Lesson, I think. And this grandmother just baked pies really well. And everybody loved her from that. And I think about my legacy, you know, of something like Wisdom Wednesday is definitely a legacy. Mm-hmm. I love to write cards. That's probably one of my legacies, a handwritten note, and making people feel special and noticed through that. So it's doing the really small things,
mm-hmm.
with some consistency, with great joy, Obviously, there's going to be the big examples, like I mentioned, but I think it's living life with some higher purpose that you're trying to help the world be a better place. Mm-hmm. And I also say, leave it better than I found it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do that in so many different ways. I just instinctively do so many different things
every day. That's excellent. Well, we're coming to a close here. So I always like to ask interviewees, what else should my listeners know that I did not ask? In other words, other words of wisdom that you want to share that, you know, kind of top of mind, because obviously you have a lot of wisdom or some of your favorite Wisdom Wednesday messages or whatever, Paula.
Yep. You know, one thing that popped in my head when you talked about retirement in the beginning, we didn't really talk so much about retirement. I do a coaching program called Second Act Retirement Coaching.
Okay.
And I think so many people race to the line of retirement because they're retiring from something. We have this, so I'll say stigma in our country, like, I got to get out of my job. I got to get out of it. And they get to that line, whatever it is, at 57, 62, 65, but they never thought about what was next. And successful retirements really happen when someone is retiring to something, not from something.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you're doing that work, you know, that getting people ready, because retirement can be an incredible, fulfilling 30, 40 years of your life.
Yes.
But if you do not set yourself up with interests, habits, projects, another job, a second career, whatever it is, something that's meaningful to you, you will be very unfulfilled. And chances are you will not have a very long retirement period.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. And that is my passion, helping people figure out what to retire to. So, you know, I use a process called strategic futuring. You know, it's kind of like strategic planning for life.
Awesome.
And again, I often say to people, use, if you have the privilege of, you know, knowing, if you have the privilege of knowing when you might leave an organization, then use those last few years to go through this strategic futuring process so that you have a plan of what you're going to retire to.
Yep.
And we share a lot of common interests, and I look forward to getting to know you better through the Rex community. I appreciate this very much. And Paula, I always say my focus in this series is to help people make the rest of life the best of life. So may the rest be the best for you.
Thank you, Jan, and same for you.
Thank you.